most scientists are pretty pragmatic, and they just don't believe in anything supernatural. They don't believe in a God. How can most scientists, Bernard, how can they not stop for a moment, look at the vastness of this universe, the wonder of it, and come up with some small facet of belief that something intelligent had to be behind it?
I don't know. I guess it goes back to history in part, because the relationship between the church and science was not always a good one. People have been burned at the stake for scientific theories. Giordano Bruno is one of them. And so this kind of poisoned the well historically. And then, you know, scientists, and I know this well because I'm a practicing scientist myself, have spent many, many years acquiring their specialized knowledge and their specialized techniques. And so you kind of get a feeling as a scientist, you know, I put a lot of thought into what constitutes reality and physical laws. And, you know, I've never seen anything in the religious side that's been very persuasive. So I'm just going to forget about that because there are more important things in life to worry about. So it's a matter of some hubris and a little bit of pride in what they've done, you know, in terms of understanding the physical world. And also there's the problem of religion. Mm-hmm. That is that religions have their dogmas, and the dogmas, unfortunately, contradict each other. And so when a scientist looks at that and goes, oh, my God, you know, this religion tells me that, and this one tells me something else, a pox on them all.
I wonder if a miracle occurs with these scientists who are skeptical right now, if they change their minds.
Well, I think that if they look carefully at what's happening in quantum physics, they might, because it's becoming more and more evident in quantum physics that consciousness creates reality. There's no doubt about it that consciousness creates reality when a measurement is made in the quantum realm. And that has, I think, profound implications. Because if consciousness is central there, then it's central everywhere.
And we all have that ability to use that, don't we?
I think we do, yes.
The God that you are proposing is not at odds, I don't believe, with science. I think they mesh, don't they?
That's the reason I wrote the book, to show that you can perfectly well believe in science, especially what I call the three pillars of science, which is the Big Bang, some 13.7 billion years ago.
Which I still don't understand, by the way.
No one really does. Don't worry about it. The Big Bang, an ancient Earth, 4.6 billion years ago, the Earth was created.
Mm-hmm.
And then evolution. Evolution, I think, is a key part of this. And I think this is so exciting because here we have a concept of spirituality that requires evolution. It requires it.
Do you factor in life throughout the universe, intelligent life, life as we know it?
Well, I think about that. Obviously, I have no idea where it is or what it would be like, but I certainly assume there's life in many places in the universe.
Yeah. There's probably an abundance.
There must be. I mean, think of it. There are probably 100 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy. There are probably 100 billion galaxies in the universe, in the known universe. It may even stretch beyond the Hubble horizon. That's a lot of billions.
You bring Einstein into the equation. How come?
Well, Einstein to me represents physics. I wanted to say, look, you can have spirituality and believe in physics and evolution. Those are the two key things, the things that are oftentimes rejected by those people who think, well, you can't have both. You can't have both science and spirituality. Now, you may not be able to have both science and religion. That may be true because religions have problems. But science and spirituality go together. And so I wrote the subtitle with Einstein sort of being the stand-in for science and Darwin, of course, for evolution.
Don't you think a scientist who understands spirituality is probably a better scientist?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I think that it shows a certain broadness of mind, a certain willingness to entertain ideas that may be contradictory. In fact, that's one of the things you have to do as a scientist, is to entertain ideas that are contradictory, because you never know where the truth is going to lie and where the false paths may be that you're going down.
Tell me about the Big Bang, if you can explain it the way you think it occurred.
Well, I think the Big Bang is the creation event by this great creator viewed from the inside. So we're looking at this from the inside. 13.7 billion years ago, you run the universe back. Everything was concentrated into what was almost literally a point with a temperature of trillions of degrees, with a density beyond imagination. And out of this, boom, the universe began to expand very rapidly. If you believe inflation theories, within like 10 to the minus 43rd seconds, which is a billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a second, roughly, the universe expanded by a vast amount, and then slowed down and started to expand more slowly, but even then at a rapid rate. And it's been going on ever since then. But what caused that, what happened before the Big Bang, or what it even means to have it before the Big Bang, that's the question.
So true. Because I think there might have been something here before the Big Bang.
Could be. The question is,
I don't know what.
Was there even time before the Big Bang? What other kind of environment might there be that doesn't have space and time? Those are the sort of thoughts we have to consider when we try to understand what this consciousness may be all about. And those are very difficult problems, of course.
And if there is this intelligence, and, you know, we think of it in terms of human intelligence, and it's probably not that at all, but if there is this intelligence, how did it start?
Well, it didn't. I mean, at one point, you have to just say something is. It just is. It's always has been. And by always, I mean outside of space and time. I don't mean always in time.
You know, you'd go crazy trying to figure it out.
Well, you just have to have a starting point. And then the problem with the multiverse theory is it too, requires a starting point. I mean, it does not come without a starting point. If you assume the universe began because of a fluctuation, you still have to have quantum laws to provide the basis for that fluctuation. No laws, no fluctuation. And so in either case, you've got to have something that just was. Just was. You can't go back any further.
What do you mean by the quantum entanglement in your book?
Well, quantum entanglement is a very interesting area of physics today because it shows that the things can, particles, including photons of light, can apparently communicate with each other even though they're not supposed to be able to. You can take, let's try an experiment here. It's possible, here's a simple way to look at entanglement. Let's just take a couple of twin brothers, Joe and Jim, who live on opposite sides of town. Now, they don't see each other in the morning, but they both go to work at the same office. Well, if Joe decides to put on blue socks, then sure enough, Jim will put on blue socks too. Even though they don't talk to each other, you notice at the office every day that, gee, they've both got the same socks. Why is that? Well, they probably don't know themselves, but somehow they become entangled with each other.
Okay.